This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. We're broadcasting today from Las Vegas, the site of last night's final presidential debate, with just 19 days remaining until the 2016 presidential election. Did we learn anything new from last night's debate? We'll talk about that, and we'll discuss the areas of greatest contrast between the two candidates. President of Susan B. Anthony's list, Marjorie Dannenfelser, will join me a little bit later to talk about the contrast between the two candidates on the issue of the sanctity of human life. And Dr. Wayne Grudem says this election for Christians comes down to not the personalities of the candidates, but their policies and their party's platforms. He joins me to talk about that a little bit later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find lots of resources there at the website. In fact, I would direct your attention to the comparison of the party platforms. I'm going to be talking about that with Dr. Grudem a little bit later. But it's a great resource. It's now been viewed by close to a million people. And this is a way you can, you know, communicate to your friends and family the critical nature of this election. Roughly 80% of the time, the parties adhere to their platforms. What's in the platforms? Well, go to TonyPerkins.com and you can find out by downloading either the written comparison or you can watch the three-minute video that shows you exactly where the parties stand on the critical issues that pertain to faith, family, and freedom. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. If you're on Twitter, you may have been watching or tweeting, following me as I was tweeting last night from inside the debate hall here in Las Vegas. We were, it was interesting. And I'm going to talk about it because I thought it was a, from the start, there was good contrast between the two candidates. You know, there's some things are similar, not much, but there's some similarities. But the areas of policy provide the greatest contrast. And Chris Wallace, at the very start, began with a discussion of the Supreme Court. Now, I think it's helpful that he started there because, quite frankly, I think that is the most critical issue in this election. We have one vacancy already on the Supreme Court. And just looking at the ages, and by the way, Kathy Roos on our team has published a new piece. And if you're getting my, if you get my daily update, you'll see it tonight. Looking back over the court decisions in the last couple of decades, the 5-4 decisions on critical issues and how close those decisions and freedoms have been either upheld or overturned. And so that's quite instructive, but she also talks about the age of the justices and quite frankly, just because of the age of some of the justices, it's quite likely that the next president is going to have a few vacancies to fill. So when Chris Wallace of Fox News started last night talking about the Supreme Court, he started with former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton asking her about the Supreme Court. And here I've got some clips I want to play for you today, and then we're going to talk about them. But this was right out of the chute last night. Chris Wallace asked Hillary Clinton, she got the first question, about the Supreme Court. Here's what she had to say.
You know, I think when we talk about the Supreme Court, it really raises the central issue in this election. Namely, what kind of country are we going to be? What kind of opportunities will we provide for our citizens? What kind of rights will Americans have? And I feel strongly that the Supreme Court needs to stand on the side of the American people, not on the side of the powerful corporations and the wealthy. For me, that means that we need a Supreme Court that will stand up on behalf of women's rights, on behalf of the rights of the LGBT community, that will stand up and say no to Citizens United, a decision that has undermined the election system in our country because of the way it permits dark, unaccountable money to come into our electoral system.
Al, she goes on to say that I have major disagreements with my opponent about these issues and others that will be before the Supreme Court. But I feel that at this point in our country's history, it's important that we not reverse marriage equality, that we not reverse Roe v. Wade, that we stand up against Citizens United. We stand for the rights of people in the workplace, and we stand up and basically say the Supreme Court should represent all of us. Well, you know what the Supreme Court does is the Supreme Court actually interprets the Constitution as it was written. That's why this is such a big issue, because you have two very different viewpoints of the Supreme Court. As was mentioned last night, there is this view from the progressive side that the Constitution is a living, breathing document and that it changes with each generation. There is the counter view, which it is a static document. It is to be interpreted as it was written. And that is the side from which Donald Trump comes. And now you can hear what he had to say. This is what he had to say to that same question last night.
I feel that the justices that I am going to appoint, and I've named 20 of them, the justices that I'm going to appoint will be pro-life. They will have a conservative bent. They will be protecting the Second Amendment. They are great scholars in all cases, and they are people of tremendous respect. They will interpret the Constitution the way the founders wanted it interpreted. And I believe that's very, very important. I don't think we should have justices appointed that decide what they want to hear. It's all about the Constitution and so important, the Constitution the way it was meant to be. And those are the people that I will appoint.
I want to draw attention to something he said, and he said it multiple times. We're going to talk about this a little bit later. With Susan B. Anthony's Marjorie Dannenfelser. But he repeatedly said last night, and it's not the first time he said it, he has said it before, that he's going to appoint pro-life justices. And you say, well, okay, so he's a Republican. Isn't that what Republicans do? No, actually it's not. He is the first one that has actually said that he will appoint justices that are pro-life. Meaning that they are, and he goes on to unpack that they will interpret the Constitution the way the founders wanted it to be interpreted, you know, as it was written, not to find somewhere in the shadows of the Constitution some rights that the left wants to create, like abortion, like the redefinition of marriage, and so on and so forth. And so this, by far, was the most significant area of contrast. Now, they go on, and we're going to talk about, and I talk about the court and the life issue all kind of wrapped into one, but we're going to talk more about the life issue in a bit, because that is a significant area of contrast with him as well. But I want you to see the significance of these two views of the Constitution, and this is on full display in this election cycle like never before. You have Hillary Clinton with the progressive view that the Constitution is a living, breathing document and the Supreme Court is somehow supposed to be the body that, like a, you know, like a regular court that you would go to, you have a judge that is advocating for the people. That's not what the Supreme Court does. The Supreme Court literally calls balls and strikes when it comes to the law. Either something that a state legislature or the Congress does is in keeping with the Constitution, or it's not. Now, of course, again, that goes back to those two different views. One view is the Constitution is not a moving target. It is what it says it is. And either something is in line with it or it's not. But with the left, the progressives, the Constitution is ever-changing. And so they want to find new ways to create new rights through the Constitution. And the way they do that is through liberal justices. So this is extremely important when we look at the future, because these justices will be influencing policy for a generation or more. Well, folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we are still in Las Vegas, broadcasting from the site here in Las Vegas, the site of last night's last presidential debate. Still to come on the program, we're going to be joined by Dr. Wayne Grudem. We're going to be talking about what this election should come down to for Christians as they wrestle with the decision they have to make. Also, the president of Susan B. Anthony's List, Marjorie Dannenfels, are going to be joining me to talk about the contrast between the candidates on the issue of human life. Now, before we do that, we've got a few more minutes before we go to the break. I want to play this clip. I'm going to jump over the Roe v. Wade because I want to save that for my conversation with Marjorie. I want to go to the conversation about WikiLeaks and Russia. Interesting exchange as Chris Wallace actually brought up the issue of the emails from WikiLeaks. Listen to this.
Secretary Clinton, I want to clear up your position on this issue because in a speech you gave to a Brazilian bank for which you were paid $225,000, we've learned from the WikiLeaks that you said this, and I want to quote, "My dream is a hemispheric common market with open trade and open borders." So that's
Thank
the
you.
Question. That's the question. Please quiet everybody. Is that your dream, open borders?
Well, if you went on to read the rest of the sentence, I was talking about energy. You know, we trade more energy with our neighbors than we trade with the rest of the world combined. And I do want us to have an electric grid, an energy system that crosses borders. I think that would be a great benefit to us. But you are very clearly quoting from WikiLeaks. And what's really important about WikiLeaks is that the Russian government has engaged in espionage against Americans. They have hacked American websites, American accounts of private people, of institutions. Then they have given that information to WikiLeaks for the purpose of putting it on the internet. This has come from the highest levels of the Russian government, clearly from Putin himself, in an effort, as 17 of our intelligence agencies have confirmed, to influence our election. So I actually think the most important question of this evening, Chris, is finally, will Donald Trump admit and condemn that the Russians are doing this and make it clear that he will not have the help of Putin in this election, that he rejects Russian espionage against Americans, which he actually encouraged in the past? Those are the questions we need answered. We've never had anything like this happen in any of our elections before.
That was a great pivot off the fact that you want open borders, okay? How did we get onto Putin?
That was the question. It was about the borders. It was not about Putin, but she very adept in doing this, but switched off that topic and got on to Putin. We're going to talk more about that still to come here on Washington Watch. Interesting exchange multiple times last night. All of these issues significant. We're going to talk about them. But when we return from this break, we're going to be joined by Marjorie Dannenfels, president of Susan B. Anthony's List, to talk about the contrast between the two candidates on the sanctity of human life. Also still to come, Dr. Wayne Grudem joins us here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're going to be back with a lot more from Las Vegas after this. Don't go away.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by the media telling you what to think? It is difficult to sort out what is true and what is false in the news. That's why Family Research Council President Tony Perkins writes a daily newsletter called The Washington Update. This daily email newsletter analyzes the most important events and topics at the forefront of the battles for religious liberty, the protection of life, and the defense of natural marriage, not only in Washington, but around the country. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from the latest election season news to underreported stories about both setbacks and successes in the fight for religious liberty, the sanctity of life, and marriage. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Visit frc.org/Washington-update today to learn more and subscribe. Again, that's frc.org. faith.org/Washington-update.
This November, faith, family, and freedom are on the ballot. After 8 years of President Obama, this election will mark the beginning of a new chapter in America. With hundreds of federal races and thousands of state and local contests, the results will determine the future of pro-life legislation, our ability to freely live out our religious beliefs, and who our next Supreme Court justices will be. That's why FRC Action is mounting the National Values Voter Bus Tour. Our bus tour is traveling the country and working with national and state groups to equip and mobilize values voters in battleground states and key races across the nation. As it travels the country, the Values Bus could be coming to a city near you. Join us in the effort for your values, your vote, your future. Visit valuesbustour.org for more information and to find a stop near you. That is valuesbustour.org. Hope to see you soon.
It's no secret that many members of the media are clueless where it comes to the essential role religion plays in our society. At a time when faith and religious liberty are the subject of much debate, this is a big cause for concern. This lack of understanding raises the question, can politics and current events be written about without the aid of religious context? Can the American media faithfully carry out its duty to tell the whole story if it does not grasp the rich culture of faith that surrounds its content? In an important talk, Michael Cromarty of the Ethics and Public Policy Center uses as his foundation the idea that there is hardly any story in the news today that is not somehow related to religion. Using his unique perspective on the American media's interaction with matters of faith, he also delves into the practical way in which his Faith Angle Forum is helping to bridge the media and religion divide. Visit frc.org/mediaandreligion to view this talk and many more. That's frc.org/mediaandreligion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. As I mentioned at the top of the program, we're broadcasting from Las Vegas, the site of last night's final presidential debate. It was interesting. A good crowd. Interesting exchange. I personally think that it was one of Donald Trump's strongest performances in these debates. But I want to stay focused on the issues, because I believe there was a lot of contrast between the two last night. And one of the starkest differences between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton is on their positions regarding abortion and the sanctity of human life. And we really saw that last night. Here to talk about it is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of Susan B. Anthony's List. Marjorie, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good afternoon. Hey, Tony.
Good to have you with us, Marjorie. I know you've been on the pro-life battlefield for a number of years. You know this issue very well. And I want to get your initial reaction. I'm going to play a clip a little bit of one of the exchanges on the Roe v. Wade decision when Chris Wallace asked both candidates about that. But I just want to first get your overall view of what happened last night on this issue between the two candidates.
Well, it was historic. It's the first time in a presidential debate where the Democrat, and in this instance the worst Democrat who has run in many years, was pinned down on her actual position on late-term abortion. He did a great job of describing what partial birth abortion is and about any abortion that she would oppose, and she clarified that the answer is none. So that was very, very helpful because clarity is everything and controversy is everything. As we move into the last phase of this election.
In fact, we've got that clip. I want to jump to that, to Chris Wallace asking Donald Trump to react to Hillary Clinton's comment on late-term abortion. Let's play that clip.
Do you want to see the court overturn Roe v.
Wade? Well, if we put another two or perhaps three justices on, that's really what's going to be, will happen. And that'll happen automatically, in my opinion, because I am putting pro-life justices on the court. I will say this, it will go back to the states, and the states will then make a determination.
Secretary Clinton.
Well, I strongly support Roe v. Wade, which guarantees a constitutional right to a woman to make the most intimate, most difficult, in many cases, decisions about her health care that one can imagine. And in this case, it's not only about Roe v. Wade. It is about what's happening right now in America. So many states are putting very stringent regulations on women that block them from exercising that choice, to the extent that they are defunding Planned Parenthood, which, of course, provides all kinds of cancer screenings and other benefits for women in our country. Donald has said he's in favor of defunding Planned Parenthood. He even supported shutting the government down to defund Planned Parenthood. I will defend Planned Parenthood. I will defend Roe v. Wade, and I will defend women's rights to make their own health care decisions.
Mr. Trump, your reaction, and particularly on this issue.
Let's hold that clip. We'll hold that one. We kind of jumped to the Roe v. Wade decisions. I want to talk about that. Marjorie, right there, clear contrast. I mean, she is not mincing words at all, saying that she will defend Planned Parenthood. She will defend Roe v. Wade. She will defend a woman's right to, in her words, make their own health care decisions. She is not at all hiding, and it's very clear she's aligned with Planned Parenthood in the abortion crowd. Okay, there you're back. We're having a little trouble hearing you, Marjorie. Let's see if we can reestablish that connection just a little bit better. The reality, when you look at these two, let me know when we get Marjorie back. We've got her on. The contrast, again, as I talked about Donald Trump saying that he would appoint pro-life justices, and he was asked about this issue of whether or not, you know, he would see the court overturning Roe v. Wade. And he said, look, if I put pro-life justices on, those justices that will interpret the Constitution, that's what's going to happen. And it's going to go back to the states, which is what it would do. And that's where the court picked it up in 1973. So this, again, is a point of very clear contrast between the two of them. Hillary Clinton championing abortion and Planned Parenthood. In fact, Cecile Richards was there last night. It's interesting, I think you can read about this in my update today if you receive that. Part of the WikiLeaks emails of John Podesta show that there is a cozy relationship between the Clinton campaign and Cecile Richards and Planned Parenthood. And of course, she was there. And her first campaign event, when she was, after she got the nomination, was at Planned Parenthood. No question that if Hillary Clinton's in the White House, Planned Parenthood will have the White House on speed dial, and vice versa. Let's go ahead and play that clip real quick and see if we can get Marjorie back on. We had a bad connection here. Let's play that clip on the late-term abortion. I think that's instructive as well. Marjorie made reference to that. Let's play that clip on the late-term abortion.
I will defend Planned Parenthood. I will defend Roe v. Wade, and I will defend women's rights to make their own health care decisions.
Mr. Trump, your reaction, and particularly on this issue of late-term partial birth
abortion.
Well,
I think it's terrible. If you go with what Hillary is saying, in the ninth month, you can take the baby and rip the baby out of the womb of the mother just prior to the birth of the baby. Now, you can say that that's okay, and Hillary can say that that's okay, but it's not okay with me. Because based on what she's saying and based on where she's going and where she's been, you can take the baby and rip the baby out of the womb in the ninth month on the final day. And that's not acceptable.
Well, that is not what happens in these cases. And using that kind of scare rhetoric is just terribly unfortunate. You should meet with some of the women that I've met with, women I've known over the course of my life. This is one of the worst possible choices that any woman and her family has to make. And I do not believe the government should be making.
Yeah, she doesn't believe the government should be involved in it, but she does believe taxpayers should fund it. All right, we're going to continue that conversation. I think we got Marjorie back. We're going to do that on the other side of this break. Don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch.
as we're broadcasting from Las Vegas, the site of last night's presidential debate. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Every day, Christian values are being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy at an alarming rate. What can ordinary Christian citizens do to make their voices heard in an arena that is set on silencing them? FRC is here to help. Every week on the FRC blog, we will publish a question of the week that people like you are asking around the country, along with our answer. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church, or about any specific value that FRC continues to stand for, whether it be life, marriage and family, or religious liberty. Go to frc.org/contact and enter Question of the Week in the subject line for the chance to be published on our blog. Again, that's frc.org/contact and enter Question of the Week in the subject line. Thank you for standing with us.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Lots of resources there for you as we are just 19 days away from the 2016 presidential election. We've got a party platform comparison. We're going to talk a little bit more about that with Dr. Wayne Grudem in just a bit. And there's other things there. Voter guides, information on how you can get involved to help your church be more engaged in the culture. All that can be found at TonyPerkins.com. All right, we're going to continue this conversation with Marjorie about this area of what I believe is tremendous contrast from last night's debate over the issue of the sanctity of human life. Marjorie, thanks for sticking around.
I missed you. Sorry about that.
And no problem. Let's talk about it. I played the clip of the, yeah. I don't know if you were able to hear it or not, but the late-term abortion.
Yeah.
As you pointed out, Donald Trump, I've never heard a candidate being as strong on that issue. In fact, two issues last night that I felt Donald Trump had a good handle on and spoke with, I think, ease. It was on the issue of job creation, trade, which is something he's very familiar with. But I was surprised at how fluid he was in talking about the life issue.
I thought so, too. And I think he found his voice here. What we can say, he's got the zeal of a convert. And often in the beginning, he stumbled a little bit. I can say that personally. I know that's true. But I know now, I think we saw now, that with the help of a very good moderator pressing the point, he was able to really say very clearly what he thought. And she did a very good job of making it very clear that she's only one person in the abortion choice, and that's the woman, and who we love and care for. But he made it very clear, too, that there are two people in every decision. And he, with striking candor, really explained what it means and what the result of her position is, that up until the very last day, it would be legal to tear that child limb from the womb. And when has that ever happened, Tony, on the presidential debate stage, has a description like that happen? Never.
And that exactly.
Is, you can't buy that ad. There is no price to put next to that ad, even in the Super Bowl. It was a real gift, and we should thank him.
Well, let me follow up with that. I mean, can you recall a GOP presidential nominee that's been so vocal on this issue?
No, the last thing I remember is a presidential debate stage last time around where the issue of defunding Planned Parenthood came up. Barack Obama said exactly what Hillary Clinton said last night. And what did our nominee, Governor Romney, said after the claim about mammograms and cancer screenings and all that, Governor Romney just completely fell flat and was not prepared, didn't know what to say, and moved on to something else. So that moment would only last for a few seconds and lingers in the air. You either capture it or you don't. And last night, Trump did it more than one time. He insisted on pro-life judges. You know, he didn't go into an exhortation about Roe versus Wade mess. He just said the states would be allowed to do what they need to do once again to protect the unborn and the woman. And she got away with saying something about defunding Planned Parenthood without an answer. But that pales into comparison given the strength of last night. It really was a historic moment for the pro-life movement. And I think we'll look back and remember it. I think, as you said at the beginning of the Tony, that in the end, we can be really annoyed with how everybody sounds, and we can really dislike how he speaks, and we should reject many of the things that he says. But the court, the Supreme Court for generations, will be affected by his decision and hers. And it's a question of where our country heads, and we may never, ever get it back. We should not presume that we can.
I think you're absolutely right. Marjorie Dannenfelser, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate, as always, your insights.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Marjorie Dannenfelser with Susan B. Anthony List. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. SBA List, they've got an action on, too. They do a great job engaged in supporting pro-life candidates as well as educating and advocating for policies that are pro-life. Very similar to FRC, we've got our action arm that's more engaged in elections. In fact, in the past, we have partnered with SBA on our values bus, which is out there running across the country. I think it's in North Carolina right now. In fact, I'll be connecting with it next week. I'll be in Virginia and North Carolina as we bring it on home as we move toward the November 8th election. And I do hope you are planning to vote. If you're still on the fence, if you're thinking, I just don't know that I can do this, or you know somebody that is, pick up the phone real quick, call them. Because on the other side of the break, we're going to have Dr. Wayne Grudem. He's going to be joining us to talk about what's before us and how can Christians come to a point of voting in this election where we have two candidates that, quite frankly, trouble a lot of Christians. How do we get to that point? What's the criteria we should use? We're going to talk about that with Dr. Wayne Grudem when we come back. So don't go away. There's much more Washington Watch to come right after this.
As an attorney in communist Romania, Virginia Prodan searched for the truth. When she finally found it in the most forbidden book, the Bible, she made it her mission to defend fellow followers of Jesus Christ against unjust persecution. For this, Virginia was kidnapped, beaten, tortured, and placed under house arrest, even coming within seconds of being executed by order of Nicolae Ceaușescu, the Romanian dictator. Virginia Prodan's extraordinary courage, her search for truth, and her defiance in the face of evil is the subject of a riveting talk that she delivered at FRC's headquarters in Washington, D.C., marking the release of her memoir, Saving My Assassin. Visit frc.org/Romania to listen to her account, as well as the disturbing parallels she sees between attacks on religious liberty in Romania during the 1980s and what is happening in America today. That's frc.org/Romania. Should our daughters and mothers be forced to serve in the military through selective service in a time of war? Should they be required to serve in units with men in primal conditions where privacy and personal hygiene are by nature out in the open, and where they are forced together in close proximity for long periods? The American military is about preparing for, fighting, and winning wars, and performing specific operations against threats to the security of our country and vital national interests. Period. Anything that distracts from the achievement of these purposes should be jettisoned. This includes placing women into special operations forces or forward-based infantry positions, and including them in the selective service. For more information on the common sense needs of our men and women in uniform, visit frc.org/womeninthedraft. That's frc.org/womeninthedraft.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. As I mentioned, we're broadcasting from Las Vegas, the site of last night's presidential debate, the third and final debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And as I mentioned, 19 days away from the election, many evangelical Christians have struggled with this election, probably like no other. You know, Wayne Grudem, professor of theology and biblical studies at Phoenix Seminary, has articulated this struggle as well as anybody I know. He's written about it, and he's here now to discuss his own evolution of thought about the presidential race. Dr. Grudem, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Good to talk with you.
Well, I know that, like many Christians, this has been a tough election cycle. And as followers of Jesus Christ, we seek to integrate our faith in everything that we do, and that includes our politics. Sometimes those choices are clear, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're easy, sometimes they're difficult. Usually they're difficult. But share, if you would, with our listeners, kind of how you've wrestled with this election and this general election.
Well, Tony, I'll be very specific. Early on in the election, in the primaries, I supported Marco Rubio, and when he dropped out, I supported Ted Cruz. My wife and I gave money to both of them, and we were hoping that one of them would win, but it didn't happen. And so Donald Trump won. Now what do we do? And so I put an editorial out on townhall.com at the end of July saying that even though I didn't say that Trump was a morally good person, that we should approve his conduct, I said that voting for him could be a morally good choice. But then the story came out of the awful video from 2005 and is describing his attacks against women, and I thought, I can't just leave it at that. So I had another editorial called Trump's Moral Character in the Election, in which I said, I have to say right now, I don't know how I'm going to vote, and I called on him to withdraw, which I thought would give us a better candidate, but he didn't, and now here we are coming up on the election, and we're back to the choice of Clinton or Trump. And then my reasoning is I really have two choices. I can vote for Clinton. I think her policies are strongly anti-Christian and hostile to Christian values. And I'm worried that she'll use the power of government to gain more and more control over our freedoms. So I'm very concerned about that. So then I only have two choices, Trump or a third-party candidate or a write-in candidate or not vote at all. And when I look at it that way, then taking away a vote from Trump and putting a third-party candidate is helping to elect Hillary. It means that Trump gets fewer votes and Hillary needs fewer to win. So my choice is either do I vote for Trump or help Hillary Clinton win. When I put it that way, I have no question at all, because on multiple issues, I agree with Trump in his policies as opposed to Clinton's policies. And so I put a third article on townhall.com yesterday that was called, If You Don't Like Either Candidate, Then Vote for Trump's Policies. And on the Supreme Court, on abortion, on religious liberty, on sexual orientation regulations, taxes, economic growth, minimum wage, school choice, Obamacare, protection from terrorists, immigration, the military, energy, safety in our cities, on all those things, I certainly agree with Trump's policies as opposed to Clinton's. And so my argument is, sadly, reluctantly, it isn't the candidate we wanted, but I think we have no choice as Christians but to vote for Trump.
Well, let me, the piece, by the way, folks, it's very good. It's at TonyPerkins.com. It's on townhall.com. I would encourage you to read it, especially as you engage in conversations in the next couple of weeks about the election. Now, I want to, you answer these questions, but for the benefit of our listeners, you know, there are those that are saying if you vote for Trump, you'll never have credibility in the future when you say that character matters. I mean, I've heard that. I mean, that's been said about me in my personal capacity. Of course, my point has been I was never drawn to Donald Trump because we have shared values. It's over shared concerns with the country. How do you address that?
A couple of things. First, if you don't vote for Trump, how can you ever say that issues matter? Protection of the unborn matters, and that biblical standards on sexuality matter. How can you ever say that any of those issues matter in the future if you don't vote for Trump and try to stop Hillary? So the argument goes that way. The second thing is, it's preposterous that you can never say in the future that character matters, because the whole last several weeks has been entirely about character, both Clinton's character and Trump's character, and that's why everybody's so fed up. I think you and I, Tony, and many other evangelicals have made it abundantly clear that we deplore the immoral conduct of Donald Trump with women, at least in the past. He says he's a changed person and he's apologized, and I hope he is a changed person. But we deplore that, but we also are very concerned about horrible examples of character deficiency with Hillary Clinton. She abandoned our diplomats to be killed in Benghazi, Libya. She vilified the victims of Bill Clinton's sexual misconduct. She illegally handled classified emails on her private server and put national security at risk. She left much of the world in chaos after 4 years as Secretary of State. And she continually acts as though she's above the law. And the frightening thing is the Internal Revenue Service and the FBI look like they are compromised and corrupted now, which is terrifying because of the power they have over our lives. But that's what's happened under this current administration, and Hillary Clinton would continue that. So what do? We say that character matters. It does matter, and we deplore the immoral conduct by both candidates, but we should vote based on the issues.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. My guest in this final segment, Dr. Wayne Grudem, professor of theology and biblical studies at Phoenix Seminary. Also in your piece, which was published yesterday on townhall.com, and folks, you can also see it at tonyperkins.com.
Or waynegrudem.com.
Or waynegrudem.com. That's another place you can see it. Folks, it's everywhere. Everywhere you turn, there's Dr. Wayne Grudem and his piece. The point that you make, in addition to this, when you talk about issues, is that, all right, look, we got two candidates really on the character issue that cancel each other out. All right. But when you look at the policies, there's a distinction. then you also talk about the party platforms. There is a clear distinction, and as we've talked about on this program before, we've actually had the author, a professor from Stephen F. Austin University, did a 30-year analysis of party platforms. It basically came up with the number of 80%, that roughly 80% of the time the parties adhere to those platforms. You make the point there's a clear contrast in these platforms.
A huge contrast, and I've read both platforms, Tony. The policies that I just mentioned with difference between Trump and Clinton a few minutes ago, the Republican platform is consistent with what I think to be biblical values, and that I outlined and defended in my book Politics According to the Bible a few years ago. The what I was just astounded at, I think over 70 times the Democratic platform is pro-abortion, pro-same-sex marriage, pro-gender confusion, but pro-increasing government domination of our lives. And I think I counted something like 70 times the Democratic platform said, we will invest in this, we will invest in that, we will invest in this. And I can translate that. What it means is we're going to take your money and spend it for you how we think best. That's what we call investment. But what they mean is government spending. And that,
right. It's
that
it's interesting.
Hillary
talks about that as contributions. And from my understanding, a contribution is something that's voluntary. But they don't see it that
way. No, because essential to, and that's a big difference on getting the economy going again. Essential to democratic thinking is that if the government spends more, the economy will grow. We've tried it for 8 years. It hasn't worked. It's never worked. It's never worked in Europe either. What they don't get through their heads is that when government spends money to stimulate the economy, it also has to take, if it spends a dollar, it has to take a dollar away from us.
Right.
And private individuals and businesses and companies, those are what grow the economy, not the government. So government spending doesn't increase economic growth. It's reducing taxes, leaving the money with the people who actually build economic value in the nation, and that's the only way to get economic growth.
Right. When you put government spending does not have the multiplier effect of the private sector in the jobs, the money that's created there. I want to go back, Dr. Grudem, and you've written about that as well. I mean, in fact, I've used a lot of your resources, and part of that was actually, you know, indirectly made its way into the party platform because I wrote a large portion of it with an understanding of
No wonder I like the platform, Tony.
Yeah, that's why you like it, because, you know, the influence of your teaching. Well, the influence of your teaching made its way in through a lot of the work that my team did. I was a delegate on the to the convention and on the platform committee.
Outstanding.
But let's talk for just a few minutes. We're almost out of time. But, Dr. Grudem, Christians now, and there's a lot of them, there's a number of them, that are saying, you know what, we just can't vote for these two candidates. It's just they're reprehensible. We can't do it. But in large part, I believe this is a problem of our own making, because too many Christians have not been involved in this arena of our world, being involved in supporting candidates, being candidates, and advocating for candidates like you did in the primary, like I did. And we come down to a situation where we're faced with an undesirable situation in large part because of our own making. We have to be more involved.
I wonder how many of the people who say I can't vote for Trump really gave their time and their money and their name and reputation to another candidate who could have stopped Trump in the primaries, because that's when the decision could have been made, that's where the change could have been made, and that's where people failed.
And in my view, those folks that sat on the sideline, not wanting to, you know, damage their reputation in terms of getting involved in the political process or offending some of their supporters or donors, and they just stayed out, but now they can be critical of everybody in the process. I just find that, quite frankly, I find it unbiblical.
Tony, I want to go back to what you say. Some people say I can't vote for Trump. And my answer is, of course you can. You don't want to. But that's what I'm trying to appeal to and saying, if you don't want to because of the person, you should want to because of the policies. That's why my article says, if you don't like either candidate, then vote for Trump's policies. I think it's not even close. There's no choice. There's no contest between them in terms of Christian values.
Final question for you, Dr. Grudem. It's another issue that's been brought up. You address it in your piece, and that is, well, you know what? We need to send the Republican Party a message that Trump is an unacceptable candidate to us, and we're not going to support the party as long as they put forward candidates like that.
Yeah, well, I'd say to people like that, you're also sending the whole country a message that Clinton is acceptable. And do you really want to say that to the whole nation? The Republican Party already got the message in the leadership that Trump was unacceptable because the leaders opposed him tooth and nail in the primaries. But he won anyway, amazingly. So why send a message that people already know and perhaps lose the future of the nation as a price for it? That's a pretty expensive message to send. I would rather say, why not send the message that a candidate like Clinton is totally unacceptable to run the country? And Trump, he will do largely what he says. He may not do everything because nobody does, but when candidates get elected, they have to stick with most of what they say or they'll lose their own party's support and they'll be totally ineffective and paralyzed. So, and his appointments to the Supreme Court that he's promised are very conservative. They're excellent. And his vice presidential choice of Mike Pence is outstanding.
It is.
And he has a number of very reliable, solid veteran conservatives in his high levels of advisory and transition team. So he's already moving in a very conservative direction, and that's mostly how he will govern, and that's what we should determine our vote by.
All right. I'm going to have to leave it there. Dr. Wayne Grudem, thanks so much for joining us. As always, great to talk with you.
Thank you, Tony. Good to talk with you.
All right. Dr. Wayne Grudem, to find out more, go to the website tonyperkins.com or waynegrudem.com, and I would encourage you to take a look at this piece. It's well-written, and it addresses all of those issues. You know, a lot of the stuff we talk about here, he's actually reduced it to writing, and it's instructive. And so, folks, you might find it helpful. Again, go to tonyperkins.com. You can follow the links over. He mentioned Mike Pence. I was talking with Governor Pence this morning. Actually, we were in the gym together working out. And, you know, that is, you know, Mike has a long track record on the life issue and a number of issues that are, I mean, he's been a champion of the pro-family movement. And that does say a lot. That's probably one of Donald Trump's first and best moves in getting a running mate who is identified as a strong evangelical and one who he talks to on a daily basis. All right. Well, folks, we're just about out of time, but I want to encourage you again. Go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and make use of that platform comparison. As Dr. Grudem was talking about, look at the policies of the candidates. And, you know, it's not just presidential candidates. It goes all the way down the ticket. You know, if someone aligns with a particular party, that would tell you that they agree with those policies. Not 100%, but to a large degree. When you look at those platforms, it is very telling. All right, folks, out of time, but thank you for being with us. Check out the website. Until next time, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.